Blog Talk Radio.
Somebody sent me a whole bunch of photos about the big Iowa flood. You remember when the big river overflowed in Iowa? And they were comparing it to a lazy New Orleans. And I got to say, I admire the people of Iowa 1,000%. The only photo I ever saw of Iowans were all pulling together to build a sandbag levee higher to stop the flood. I never heard a discouraging word. I never saw infighting. I never saw blaming. I never saw anybody demanding that they be rescued. They all pitched in together, and maybe that's why Iowa is the backbone of the nation. But I do have to tell you guys, you got to get rid of your senator. He's a flag burner. A couple of other quick comments. Did you notice how fast they impeached Blagojevich, who to me is the most honest politician in America? I think that he's an example of what real politicians strive to be. You know what worries me about that? The night that he was impeached, they pulled his bodyguard protection away from him. And there's a lot of Democrats that want to make sure that Blagojevich goes because he's an eyesore. But I think he's also got a lot of goods on a lot of people. And I think the fact that they pulled his bodyguard so quickly is wishful thinking on harm coming to him. And I don't think that was right. And he never got his day in court. He's actually been impeached, but he has not been given the right to face his accusers. So as guilty as he may be, he still has the inalienable American right to confront his accusers. And I hope he gets justice.
He's like the
real
Godfather.
American justice.
The Godfather in the hospital.
And I guess you saw in the news that Mayor Bloomingdale was attacked by a Staten Island groundhog. And they're now bringing the groundhog up on charges. They're going to bring one attempted murder charge and two sexual assault charges. When I got drafted into the military, they give you a test to determine what your MOS is going to be. Most guys that get drafted in the Army, the MOS is 111, which is infantry. You're going to be a straight leg or armored infantry. My MOS was 113, which was operations and intelligence. And all my buddies used to laugh at me and say, "What's so intelligent about you?" So we get down to Fort Hood, Texas, and we're doing advanced infantry training. And it was time to graduate, and everybody was wondering where we were going to go. Were we going to go to Germany, or were we going to go to Korea? And so I started a rumor that we were going to march to the Gulf of Mexico and leave for Germany by submarine. And the rumor was so effective that 1 week later I was in the commissary and I saw the battalion commander buying water wings. Hang in there, we'll give you another tune. Hi, boys and girls, it's Captain Boycott. I found this on the internet and I thought I'd share it with you. And then I'll tell you who wrote it. Twice in my lifetime, America, the arsenal of democracy, has come from behind to ensure victory. It is not evident that should another war arise, those producing it will make every effort to see that the arsenal of democracy is knocked out in the first round. How this can be done, I do not know. But I do know that the progress made in airplanes and self-propelled missiles is such that the possibility of an early knockout cannot be discounted. Perhaps a good illustration of what I am trying to put across to you is this. When I went to school, and I presume that is the same now, all of the children were taught how to form in column and march out of the building in an orderly manner in case of fire. This instruction did not, so far as I know, produce fires, but when fire occurred, the lives of the majority of children were saved. If we go to the extreme of saying that preparedness produces wars, then the instruction in fire drills would produce fires. Therefore, we should not teach children that a fire may come, that the building may burn, and as a result of such teaching, have the sad duty of removing the charred little bodies from the ruined schoolhouse. You men are all American citizens, and in your generation, you will have a very large voice in determining the election of our public servants and the enforcement of our laws. I am sure that you have found out that discipline, self-reliance, mutual respect, and faith are necessary in the Army. Those traits are just as necessary in civilian life. Laws which are not enforced had better not be promulgated. Referring again to the fire department aspect of the prevention of war, a very large proportion of the duties of the fire departments in large cities is not the extinguishing of fires, but their prevention through advice and supervision. You men are all potential firemen. You have put out the fire by your heroic efforts. It is now your duty as citizens to see that other fires do not occur, and that you and your children are not again called upon to extinguish them. I have been speaking to you not as your commanding general, but rather as an old man to young men. I am in no way trying to propagandize you, but as I said before, it is my considered opinion that my duty demands that I should explain to you things as I see them. Let me say that it is my profound hope that we shall never again be engaged in war, but also let me remind you of the words attributed to George Washington. In time of peace, prepare for war. That advice is still good. I am firmly convinced that we must have universal training, because the one hope for a peaceful world is a powerful America, with the adequate means of instantly checking aggressors. Unless we are so armed and prepared, the next war will probably destroy us. No one who has lived in a destroyed country can view such a possibility with anything except horror. Man is war, war is conflict, fighting is an elemental exposition of the age-old effort to survive. If we again believe that wars are over, we will surely have another, and damned quick. We had better look out for ourselves and make the rest of the world look out for themselves. If we attempt to feed the world, we will starve and perhaps destroy America. Roman civilization fell due to the loss of the will to conquer, satisfaction with the status quo and high taxes, which destroyed trade and private enterprise. These conditions eventually forced people out of the cities. The cycle is returning. It is very easy for ignorant people to think that success in war may be gained by the use of some wonderful invention like the atomic bomb, rather than by hard fighting and superior leadership. There are a host of people who have to squat to piss, who will say that this will be the last war, and that from now on we will only need world clubs. They are the ones who will be responsible for the deaths of millions of people. The pacifists are always at it. I met a visiting fireman of supposedly great eminence who told me that this was to be the last war. I told him that statements since 2600 B.C. had signed such statements. Since 2600 B.C. had signed the death warrants of millions of young men. He replied with the stock lie, "Oh, but things are different now. My God, will they never learn?" There are all kinds of low-class slime who are trying and will continue to try to wreck this country from the inside. Most of them don't know it, but they're actually working for the Russians. Some of them do know it, though, and it doesn't matter whether they call themselves communists, socialists, or just plain foolish liberals. They are destroying this country. Politicians are the lowest form of life on earth. Liberal Democrats are the lowest form of politicians. I really shudder for the future of our country. Someone must not only win the war, but also the peace. I believe that Germany should not be destroyed, but rather should be rebuilt as a buffer against the real danger, which is Russia and its Bolshevism. The difficulty in understanding the Russian is that we do not take cognizance of the fact that he is not a European, but an Asiatic, and therefore thinks deviously. We can no more understand a Russian than a Chinese or a Japanese, and from what I have seen of them, I have no particular desire to understand them, except to ascertain how much lead or iron it takes to kill them. In addition to his other amiable characteristics, the Russian has no regard for human life, and they are all out sons of bitches, barbarians, and chronic drunks. Russia knows what she wants, world domination, and she is laying her plans accordingly. We, on the other hand, in England and France, to a lesser extent, don't know what we want. We get less than nothing as a result. If we have to fight them, now is the time. From now on, we will get weaker, and they will get stronger. Let's keep our boots polished, bayonets sharpened, and present a picture of force and strength to the Russians. This is the only language that they understand and respect. If we fail to do this, then I would like to say we have had victory over the Germans and have disarmed them, but we have lost the war. The one thing that I could not say and cannot yet say publicly is that my chief interest in establishing order in Germany was to prevent Germany from going communist. I am afraid that our foolish and utterly stupid policy in regard to Germany will certainly cause them to join the Russians and thereby ensure a communistic state throughout Western Europe. We have destroyed what could have been a good race of people, and we are about to replace them with Mongolian savages and all of Europe with communism. Poland is under Russian domination, so is Hungary, so is Czechoslovakia, and so is Yugoslavia, and we sit happily by and think that everybody loves us. It seems to me that Russia has a certain sphere of influence in Korea, Manchuria, and Mongolia. We promised the Europeans freedom. It would be worse than dishonorable not to see that they have it. And that's, I left that, and that's where I finished up. But you know what? You listen to what Patton says, and the enemy is only slightly different. And the day will come when the draft will have to come back if we have time to assemble. And I do believe his philosophy is right about the next great hit. And I think that when you look at 9-1-1, that was only two planes and that was only two buildings in one city. And God help us if that's 1,000 planes and 1,000 buildings and 100 cities. And anybody who thinks that they're immune because they don't live in New York City is also being very foolish. Talk to you, boys and girls.
that you do. Forget if I could, but my heart is blind. You are gone out of sight, but not out of my mind.
Chapel in the moonlight, while we're strolling down the aisle, where roses entwine. How I love to hear you whisper in the chapel in the moonlight, that the love light in your eyes forever will shine. Till the roses turn to ashes, till the organ turns to rust. If you never come, I'll still be there, till the moonlight turns to dust. Chapel in the moonlight, as they sing, oh, promise me forever be mine. Chapel in the moonlight, as they sing, oh, promise me forever be mine.
In the chapel in the moonlight.
The media will tell you America is weak. At the House and the Senate, UN traitors will speak. Passing laws to kill children, they don't have a clue. Our declaration has been destroyed by the ACLU. In Iraq, as I lie here, my body all holes, I think of those traitors who bargained and sold, and I wish that my sawgun had given the same to the flag burners who sold out the Patriot game. www.spiritofamericapartybook.com. The resurrection is coming.
Come on, you young rebels, and list while I sing. For the love of one's country is a terrible thing. It banishes fear with the speed of a flame, and it makes us all part of the patriot game. So I gave up my boyhood to drill and to train, to play my own part in the patriot game. And now as I lie here, my body all holds, I think of those traitors who bargained and sold. I wish that my rifle had given the same to those quislings who sold out the patriot. Thank you.
just so steady. You are my best love. You are my best love. You are my
Hi, you boys and girls. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party, book.com. And we're also on Blog Talk Radio under the call letter SOAP, which stands for Spirit of America Party. And my subject for this Eve before Memorial Day weekend is An Anzac is Coming Home. Before his deeds are forgotten, and his sacrifice tossed aside by the media who hides bravery and valor, before the bungling atop PC brass tries to quick-slip his body past the honor guard at Dover Air Force Base, the first American stop on the journey home, past the office of a flag-burning senator who never begs forgiveness, only makes speeches pretending to protect false freedoms, welcome home, brave soldier. We love you. We will remember your sacrifice as if you were Jesus Christ himself. The backstabbing media will forget his name. His tortured body was fished out of the Tigris River yesterday. And isn't it funny? As soon as the word got out that there were whip marks on his body, the news disappeared from the media completely, not even subtitles, between 11:39 and 11:40. at night. We prayed he would be saved. He was one of three taken in an ambush. The surrender freaks will say he died in vain in a war that did not have to be fought. And they will say a world who thrives on surrender, and I'm talking about Europe, which let the Germans walk all over them and gave up all the Jews to buy a peace in their time. They will say he died for nothing. They will say he died for nothing in a war that did not have to be fought. That a merciful enemy will let us live as long as we don't struggle like a 911 airline stewardess. Traitors will win elections, promising false freedoms, which is only a stay of execution. Anzac's body bears many wounds, but the deadliest were the wounds inflicted by the people who tried to stop his victory by blocking fighting funds and visiting his torturers in Syria. Those 100-day quislings who voted to burn the flag that drapes his coffin, the 48 senators and 135 Viet Congress mice who signed his death warrant 40 days before 9-1-1. He was only 20, and he was betrayed by a senator who bailed out on a drowning woman to save his own worthless reputation. He was betrayed by a president who partied while Americans were butchered in Mogadishu, Kenya, Tanzania, Yemen, Al-Khobar, and even Waco, Texas, which gave us Oklahoma City. Now the cut-and-run party has convinced the quick-fix people that this is the wrong war at the wrong time. While Iran cooks the nuke books and is given a pass by a UN inspector named Mohammed, the majority of Americans still see a strong nation, while 25% of the Muslim world see lambs about to be sacrificed at the feast of Eid al-Jihad. Yet almost 6 years later, as pregnant mothers jumped with shoes on fire into the streets of New York, presidential candidates try to convince us that they can lead us out of hell. No one was ready for 9-1-1. And barely, maybe, one standing for reinfection today can lead us to victory. But the roster is very pathetic. But tonight, one who rose up from the 9-1-1 ashes to become a freedom firefighter is being delivered back home to his parents, who only 7 short years ago watched him graduate at grammar school. Take a look at your children. I sat with my grandson. He is 13. In 5 years, he's eligible for a draft that may have to come back. You want to win this war, or you want to fool around? You want to wait until it's your turn, or do you want to support the people who are taking the turn to defend us today? I am listening to an Irish song about a hero of freedom who gave up his life, that his country may live. And the Irish were 500 years fighting just to take the slave chains off. And we haven't felt a slave chains since Lincoln freed the slaves. But you want to know something? Out there in this cruel world, there's a set of chains with your name on them. And you don't believe it's not going to happen to you. Well, the world is full of people who believed, full of bodies who believed it was never going to happen to them. Yes, so I'm listening to an Irish song about a hero of freedom who gave his life that his country may live. Sing out, they died their land to save. And the name of that tune is The West's Awake. The name of our tune is The West is Still Asleep. I am attaching a song about an Irish hero named the Bold Robert Emmet. And if you listen to the words, you will feel the suffering that one brave GI suffered, alone, without a friend, and being tortured, murdered, and dumped into the Tigris River, according to the rules of the Geneva Convention, which only we abide by. No movie book deal for for him, just a small gratuity and a folded flag for mom. While illegal immigrants demand citizenship of flying another country's flag and chanting Osama at soccer games. And they demand a citizenship of flying another country's flag. While spoiled students demand free education and deny ROTC recruitment, taught by sex perverts and communist professors. God knows where they're going to hide when we lose. But like a phoenix rising out of the 911 ashes, God gives us Anzacs, Pat Tillmans, and a Casey Sheehan who was betrayed by his own mother, Cindy Glover. How hideous we have become as a nation. It's a wonder we can face at the daylight. We should all be hiding in the shadows. Still, Anzacs give me hope. In my church, there is still an American flag on the wall with 47 names of those who were butchered on 9/11, including a fireman who survived the Beirut barracks bombing that was created by Hezbollah and Iran. And we're going to cut and run from Iran. We're going to use the excuse Iraq is the wrong war, not to face our obligation to stop Iran from killing us next time again. Yep, on my in my church is a flag with 47 names of those who died on 9/11. They did not go to war, they went to work. And they did not come home that night. And their spiritual ashes arose in the sky that evening, while America crapped its pants, wondering, are we going to get hit again? And now all of a sudden, the Democrats are singing, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Wolf? On a nearby table in my church is a logbook of 207 names of volunteers who rose up to take their place on the battlefield, including three brothers from one family and two Catholic priests. On the eve of Memorial Day weekend, the last thing that's going to be on your mind is the suffering and sacrifice of your fellow Americans. Take 1 minute, put down the Franken beer, and look skyward and thank all who died so that you could live. Anzac will not be the last to be tortured and die without a friend to say goodbye to in an Al-Qaeda den. Pray that the day never comes when it is your body being pulled out of the Hudson River or the Potomac or the big Jihad Muddy. This is the First World War that this country is not up to fighting back. We are counting on a handful of Anzacs to save our worthless hides. And we have even given Al-Qaeda a timetable to come kill us. I wonder when 9/11 Part 3 arrives, will the flag burners hang up their mission accomplished banner? You never saw an American mass grave yet, huh? Well, stick around. The motto should be, no one comes home until the job is done in Iran. www.spiritofamericapartybook.com and www.blogtalkradio.com. SOAP is the call letters. And Mr. Anzac, I thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for trading your life for mine. You saved my family's life. God be with your family.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended.
Right, oh my God, another plane has just hit. It hit another building, flew right into the middle of it. Explosion.
There was a huge explosion sound. Everyone came out. A large section of the building is blown out.
Two planes into the towers of 1 and 2 World Trade Center. A third plane crashed to the Pentagon.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life.
I'm very worried, very scared.
And I had to start again with
just my children and my wife.
It shakes everything that you love.
Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Lower Manhattan looks like it was bombed during the Second World War.
Some of the casualties are in the collapsed building and buildings around the World Trade Center. I'm told that it's just a scene of rubble and utter devastation.
This country will rebound, and what can you say in a situation? There's just not a lot we can say.
Oh, beautiful, our heroes proved.
This is something that's affecting everyone directly.
In liberating strife.
Not just the guys that are going overseas to fight for us.
I pray that God will give our leaders wisdom.
Who more than self, our country loves.
There's no reason for this, there's no excuse for this, and there's something like this, it's just something you never thought you would live to see.
America, America, may God thy gold refine, till all success.
We will do whatever is necessary to protect America and Americans. I ask the American people to join me in saying a thanks for all the folks who have been fighting hard to rescue our fellow citizens, and to join me in saying a prayer for the victims and their families.
Rubble in the fruited plain. But now wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood from sea to shining sea. You know, I wish I had somebody to help me say this.
The resolve of our great nation is being tested. But make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test. God bless.
I'm back. That was a little Brazilian soft shoe, and the reading before that. It was sort of draggy. I apologize for that. I was reading by flashlight, and it was handwritten notes. I got to turn out the flashlight a minute. The CIA truck is going by again. So now that I've set you free, I'm going to read you about something that I noticed the other day. And it coincides with Cindy Sheehan and never giving the mighty Casey his turn at bat. I just happened to be, I was at my pro-life grandson's house, and he was watching a videotape, and this is for newborn kids, okay? And the videotape is called A Baby Einstein. I don't know if you've seen that or not. And Baby Mozart, they have music, and they have images, they have colors, they have pictures of animals, and the kid sits there like a TV zombie. It's amazing. I just hope they don't make him watch Sesame Street and the communist chipmunks. So it's, the videos are designed to make newborns smarter. And I said, let me do something for the Democrats with Or-tism, T-I-S-M. So I put together this mental aid. This is for crybaby liberal communist kids from the ages of 30 to 75. I could have said from 29 to 75, but 29 is the liberal crybaby communist age of reason. So I want to give him a year to mature. And I have a picture of a polar bear. He's standing on one foot, and it says, "The ice is burning my feet, man." And then underneath that it says, "Now you can get Albin Gore carbon credits and a free Louisiana refrigerator with a make-believe $100,000 graft certificate. Cold cash is only for Congress mice." And the song is A Fever, and the color is Hell Hot. See, every song, when the kid watches Baby Mozart, there's a picture, there's a song, and there's a color, or a variety of colors. Then I have the Leonardo da Vinci painting of the Mona Lisa, and this one says, "Leonardo da Vinci painted this little number by the numbers, and if you scrape the paint off, you will see that the Da Vinci area codes are 202, being Democrat hell. And the color is mauve, and the song is Where Have All the Flowers Gone, and Why Did We Smoke Them?" And then I have the next picture, which is just in time for the attack on the Catholic Church and the Christian Church for Holy Week. And it says, "Just in time for Holy Week to spread the other cheek." It's supposed to be "Turn the other cheek, jerk." And it's a picture of a human skeleton, a full-grown human skeleton. And it says, "Two sets of bones of Jesus were found by the Communist Party of North America. One set when Jesus was 40 years old. And one set when he was a child of 5. And also found was the skeleton of the taxicab that Jesus hailed when he and Mary Magdalene used to go to the Jerusalem disco on Shabbat. And also found," and I have a picture of a New York yellow calf, "and also found was the tip that Jesus rendered unto Caesar, the cab driver. The color is hot Lincoln Hoover Boston Globe pink." I call it the Boston Glob, because anybody that works there has to be a globule. "And the song is Save the Last Eternal Dance for Me." Then underneath that I have a picture of a smiling Henry Waxman, and behind him is the flag he voted to burn. And it says, the caption says, "The Waxman, and don't let him Simonize you too." And then I have a picture of Nancy Pelosi standing in front of the flag as she voted to burn. And I captioned that one, "A Sneaker of the House." And then the next one is John Kerry, I call him the Boston Strangler, the Boston Freedom Strangler. And he's standing in front of the American flag that he voted to burn. And underneath him is the caption, "Some of my best uneducated friends are in the overpaid military." And the color is Genghis Khan, Envy Green. The song is "Somebody Stole My Gal and Inheritance." And I forgot to do colors and songs for the Waxman and for Sneaker Pelosi. So let me pick a color for the Waxman. I would say Funeral Black. And the song should be "My Heart Belongs to Daddy." And Nancy Pelosi, Sneaker of the House, the color will be a royal purple. And the song will be "Everybody's Doing It." And then we go down to Bloody Murtha. And under the picture of Bloody Murtha is "Arab Scam, Never Heard of It." Oh, you mean Backsheesh Atlantic City. I'm over that. Yes, I am for slow bleeding, but I'm not the head leech. And the color is Lee Harvey Oswald khaki. And the song is "He Is Not Heavy, He Is Al-Qaeda." And the next one is the smiling Count Dracula of Communist Vermont, the only state in the Union to join the Warsaw Pact. And it's Senator Leaky Leahy, and he's saying, "You see that background rag, and there's a flag behind him? I voted to burn it twice, and bayoneting kids is freedom of speech." And Leaky Leahy pretends to care, but like the rest of the Senate leeches, votes to kill kids and burn the American flag. Usually they do it 40 days before 911 attacks, SJR-7. And the color is Traitor Yellow, and the song is the Abu Ghraib song, which I'll play for you. You'll get a kick out of it. And you have to put your panties on your head in order and dance around the lampshade. Now, all the above senators never once called for an IED pre-detonator, not once in 5-6 years of this war. Never once did they call for a $2 million a combat zone death benefit. Never once did they say that the troops were underpaid. As a matter of fact, during their last reign of death, they were paying $6,500 to bury a Mogadishu miler. That's $3,500 less than they paid the GIs in World War II. GIs in World War II got 10 grand. Bush came along, he raised the ante to 100. Still not enough. The ante should be a 2 million, and loss of limb a 1 million, and vital organs a 1 million. And Kennedy and Kerry should get 75 cents per athlete's foot. The color is Traitor Yellow, and the song is the Abu Ghraib song. And then I say, they knew nothing about the 911 or Walter Reed rats, but they are all Walter Reed rats. And now they are grandstanding, faking patriotism. And the next picture I have is Cindy Sheehan, and she's standing next to her lover, giving the thumbs up sign, and that's the overweight Che Guevara of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, the owner of Citgo. And the caption underneath says, "No, this is not my son. That's the DNC chairman. My son's body is being dragged around here somewhere. Yes, I made sure the mighty Casey never got his turn at bat. I struck him out. She never even put a gravestone on his grave until it was a political advantage for the Communist Party. What family would not put a grave marker for a son? The monument people take rubles, and I have a picture of Casey, who was the most maligned GI of the war, betrayed by his own mother." Unbelievable, man. So I did a little digging, and I'm going to tell you about Casey, because nobody spoke up for Casey. Just like nobody spoke up for Jesus. And Cindy the cock has crowed 3 times. Casey Austin Sheehan, He was born on May the 29th, 1979, and he died on April the 4th, 2004. He was a specialist in the U.S. Army who was killed by enemy action while serving in the Iraq War. And you know who killed him? The State Department. He is the son of Cindy Sheehan. I'd like to know her maiden name. Who subsequently has become a prominent anti-war protester and traitor. I put that in there. That's my poetic license. And Patrick Sheehan, a sales representative, who needs a size 39 thrashing with a Louisville Slugger to let this woman destroy the reputation of her son and the brave deeds of her son. You are a Mickey Mouse father, in my humble opinion. So, his early years. You want to hear about his early years? This American terrorist? He joined the Cub Scouts at the age of 6. At 8, he became an altar server in his church. In 1996, he attained the rank of Eagle Scout. Oh, my God. An Eagle Scout. Do you know how the left hates Scouts? The second one awarded by his Boy Scout troop, and troop is 180. After his death, the Casey Austin Sheehan Memorial Award was created as an annual award to honor his memory. He graduated from Vacaville High School in Vacaville, California, with honors. Oh, he's one of the Kerry dummies, huh? In 1997. In 2000, he graduated from Solano Community College with an associate's degree in drama. And I often asked why he joined the military. Why would he join the military when he doesn't have to? Was he feeling patriotic, or was he trying to get away from his communist mother? In May of 2000, Sheehan enlisted in the United States Army as a light-wheeled vehicle mechanic, MOS 63B. It has been reported that he had originally considered enlisting as a chaplain's assistant, MOS 56M. So you can see the guy is on the peaceful side. Okay? He's not a bloodthirsty warrior. Sheehan had acted as an altar server during the Palm Sunday Mass on the morning of his death. So he stayed close to his God. Just as his mother stays close to her God. Karl Marx. Casey Sheehan, near the end of his tour of duty, the U.S. invasion of Iraq began. He re-enlisted. The guy re-enlisted. This is a God and country guy, knowing that his unit would be sent to Iraq. Now, do you think he went there to kill Iraqis, or he went there to help Iraqis? Sheehan's division, the 1st Cavalry Division, was sent to Iraq. On March the 19th, 2004, Sheehan's unit, Charlie Battery, 1st Battalion, 82nd Field Artillery Regiment, arrived at FOB War Eagle in Sadr City. Just a few weeks later, on April the 4th, Sheehan was killed in action. After volunteering, so he volunteered once to serve his country, he volunteered twice to go back and do it again, and then while in country, he volunteered to go out and help the Iraqi people. And he was killed in action after volunteering as part of a quick reaction force to rescue American troops. The chapel at Fort Hood started a new Knights of Columbus chapter that was named the Specialist Casey Austin Sheehan Council. Sheehan is buried in Vacaville Elmira Cemetery in Vacaville, California. And as of May 2006, now this guy died in 2004, his mother had provided a tombstone at his grave following criticism that Casey, who died in 2004, lacked a gravestone. His mother paid for the tombstone, stating, "It is important for the rest of Casey's family to have one. I guess the pain of seeing it etched in marble that he is dead is another pain I will have to deal with. And don't forget to vote communist." Cindy maintains the United States government should have paid for it. So she was holding out till the government would come up with the money. How about you came up with the money and you sent the government the bill? And the Department of Veterans Affairs does provide monuments upon request. So then you wonder if she made the request. So now, to dig some information up on Casey Sheehan, I'm going to play you a tune, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to read you some blogs from Black Five.
Hang in there, boys and girls. Let's see what we got for you here. We'll do a Valentine song.
Over the mountain, across the sea, there's a girl waiting for me.
That a judge let an al-Qaeda terrorist go, a key al-Qaeda terrorist, one that was responsible for the bombings of Tanzania and Kenya, and also the USS Cole. So I think that judge should be, he should be exiled from the country. He should have to go to one of the countries that would take him in. And here's a little memory, a trip down memory lane for Americans who don't get justice.
Hi, you boys and girls. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book at .com. It is reported tonight that President Obama bin Laden has signed five executive orders. That's four more than most presidents have done in their first few days in office. Okay, but that's neither here nor there. But three of them are related to the protection of terrorists at the expense of the American people. So I'm going to give you a deja vu, a rendezvous, and I'm going to tell you that everything goes back to the Clintons, who are now in power again. Obama is not in power. He's not his own man. The Clintons are calling all the shots, and all the Clinton termites are calling all the shots. And I'm going to talk to you about a guy who's forgotten. He's one of the first victims of terrorism on the Clinton watch, and his name is Louis Pepe. He was a 300-pound federal prison guard in New York City. Okay. And today, he feels his way around an empty room because he's blind. Not only is he blind, but he's subject to seizures. His life is not worth living. He has to reinforce hope every day. Okay. He was the victim of a double-teamed attack while he was escorting two terrorists who were responsible for the World Trade Center bombing that Clinton ignored. Okay. And these two terrorists were living a cozy life in a New York City jail. And they didn't even have inspections in their prison cell. And they didn't toss their bunks because they had rights, just like the Gitmo murderers are going to have rights over your rights, your right to live and survive. So Louis Pepe was escorting two, not one, but two terrorists back to their cells. And one of them sprayed his face with hot sauce and blinded him. And the other one took a comb that he bought in the commissary and sharpened it down to a dagger and stabbed him in the eye 3 inches into his brain. Okay? And when the FBI came to see the video, because there's videos in all of the prison walks, there was no video. How's that? No video. One guard with two criminals. One unarmed guard with two criminals. So Louis Pepe got no justice. But the sad part about it is, when Louis Pepe went to court to listen to the sentencing of the terrorist that stabbed his life away, the judge said that it wasn't an act of terror. I think her name is Brenda Batts, and her middle name is Ding. And when Pepe protested, she had him removed from the courtroom. I'm surprised she didn't try and stab him in the other eye. So I'm going to read you some excerpts on the reporting that took place at the time that this happened. So hang in there a second. If you Google Louis Pepe, you'll get Louis Pepe, the actor, for pages and pages. But Louis Pepe, the victim, the all-around American good guy, you'll be hard to find him. Soon he will disappear as the communists rewrite history. Louis will be gone from Google Earth. Prison guard claims government is sanitizing his brutalization. This is from a left-wing article, okay? Louis Pepe was a federal prison guard at MCC Manhattan in 2000, the year 2000, when he was brutally attacked, stabbed in the eye, and more, by two of the defendants in the case involving the 1998 bombings of the U.S. embassies in Africa. One of the attackers, Mamdou Mahmoud Salim, was reported to be an associate of Osama bin Laden, who Clinton never got. But he went around asking, when is Bush going to get bin Laden for 8 years? Salim gets a sentence Monday, and Pepe plans to be there. He is outraged that Salim will only get 17 to 21 years for the assault. That's murder to me. You take a man's eye, what is the saying, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth? You take a man's eye, you take his life. Even though he is facing trial and a possible life sentence on conspiracy charges for the 1998 attack. We can't say we blame him. If you read the account of the attack, it sounds horrific. But what's up with Pepe's claim that the U.S. government has downplayed the attack and cast him in a role that suggests he was careless in allowing the attack to happen? This is one sad story, and here's some of it. In an interview Sunday with the Associated Press, who does not love America, Pepe sat in his wheelchair in a small room in a Queens house where he lives with his parents. Pepe and the government and Salem have combined to sanitize what Pepe said the government and Salim have combined to sanitize what happened on the 1st of November. This guy gets stabbed in the eye on All Saints Day. Portraying the assault as quick and almost entirely Salim's doing after the guard failed to handcuff the inmates. Pepe said he will tell the judge how he properly handcuffed the inmates before they slipped free, blinded him with hot sauce, beat him repeatedly, and even tried to rape him before stabbing him to get his keys in a bid to free other suspected terrorists. Both of them did it, not just one, Pepe said excitedly, his right eye wide open and a piece of gauze resting in the socket where his left eye used to be. Pepe said the attack lasted an hour rather than 20 minutes that prison authorities maintain it took for help to arrive from less isolated parts of Manhattan's Metropolitan Correctional Center. Pepe described how he resisted throughout the attack, even giving his inmates his house keys when they demanded his prison keys. He said the inmates scrawled the sign of the cross in his blood on his chest before they left him for dead. In the end, Pepe walked out of the cell block, the sharpened comb still stuck in his eye. He said Sunday that he had warned the government before the attack not to let the terrorism inmates bunk together or be issued sturdy plastic combs and condiments such as hot sauce and honey. For more than 2 years, Pepe was hospitalized. He suffered a stroke that left him partially paralyzed. You don't even know this guy. You don't even know this act of terror took place downtown New York City. When they demanded his prison keys. For more than 2 years, he was hospitalized. He suffered a stroke, and he left him partially paralyzed, along with pneumonia, a collapsed lung, seizures, infections, a blood clot, and high fevers. He underwent brain surgery and spent 3 weeks in a coma. He still lives in a modest home where he once took care of his ailing parents, who now take care of him, despite their ages of 79 and 80. "We want his name cleared," says Pepe's father, Frank Pepe, emphasizing the family's discontent with the government's level of support for his son. "We want the house fixed. I'm not going to live forever. I want him set up so he's comfortable." Pepe sleeps on a small donated bed and maneuvers his wheelchair across worn floors. Almost no one visits him. Pepe said his pain from the collapsed left side of his head to the stroke-damaged legs is chronic. "Every day it hurts so much that it feels like I'm going to be dead." And we hope that the truth comes out. How's that? Okay, that's one article. Hang in there, I'll give you somebody else's article. This I found on Federal Jack. Panel rules a jail stabbing constituted terrorism. New York Times, a reputed former leader of Al-Qaeda, who was serving 32 years in prison for stabbing a jail guard in 2000, must be resentenced, a federal appeals panel in Manhattan ruled on Tuesday, because a judge wrongly concluded that the man's crime did not meet the legal standard for terrorism. Federal prosecutors who argued that the attack met the standard for terrorism, and this is what's going to go on here in the new, all over the country when these Al-Qaeda boys leave Gitmo, and you know what? They're going to all come back to haunt us, whether they come back in Afghanistan and kill more Americans, or Iraq, or in Djibouti, or in New York City and in Texas. They're coming. Federal prosecutors, they have a life's work. It's their life's work to kill Americans. They want to put the cross in blood on your chest. Federal prosecutors who argued that the attack met at the standard for terrorism had sought a life sentence for the defendant, Mamdou Mahmoud Salem. Officials have described him as a founder of Al-Qaeda and a former top aide to Osama bin Laden. He pleaded guilty to stabbing the guard, Louis Pepe, in 2002. Prosecutors said the stabbing was part of a fruitless plan to take hostages and escape from the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Lower Manhattan, downtown New York, and nobody knew what was going on. And nobody knew on September 10, 2001, there was anything going on. Mr. Pepe, who was stabbed in the eye, was left with severe brain damage. At the time of the stabbing, Mr. Salem was awaiting trial in a terrorist conspiracy case stemming from the 98 bombings of two American embassies, which Clinton ignored. I still remember the people in Kenya and Tanzania. I seen 500 blacks sitting in blood. They were just passers-by, in which 224 people were killed. He later testified that he had become frustrated with his lawyers and stabbed Mr. Pepe so he could take his keys, unlock a visitor's room, and attack his lawyers so they would withdraw from his case. In sending the case back for a new sentence, a three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit held unanimously that the attack included the required elements to be considered a crime in the furtherance of terrorism under the sentencing guidelines at the time. Judge John Walker Jr. wrote the decision, which was joined by Judges John O. Newman and Sonia Sotomayor. Eileen L. Trotter, Mr. Pepe's sister, said after being told of the ruling, "This is definitely our early Christmas gift." She said that her brother continues to improve with the assistance of physical therapy and treatments. And Richard B. Lind, who represents Mr. Salem in the assault case, said he planned to ask Judge Deborah A. Batts to impose the same 32-year sentence on his client rather than a harsher one. So Deborah Batts is the bastard that sold out America, and she's a judge. And how did she get to be a judge? Who wasn't paying attention? And here's the story that took place at the hearing. As attacker is sentenced, a victim vents disgust and is ejected. Now remember, Deborah Batts is sitting on the bench. Batty Batts. A former Manhattan jail guard who was stabbed in the eye with a sharpened comb by a top aide to Osama bin Laden in 2000 was ejected from his attacker's sentencing hearing yesterday. And let me tell you something, guys. If you're out there on the battlefield, we don't need prisoners. We do not need to make a citizen's arrest. We need to win the war, and the way you win the war is you kill the enemy. And they came on the battlefield to kill you. Make sure that they leave the same way that you don't leave, the way they want you to leave. You make sure you take care of number one, and you finish him off on the battlefield. After he repeatedly shouted at the defendant and the judge. So Pepe got upset at the hearing. Dozens of his fellow correction officers walked out in protest from the hearing, at which the defendant was sentenced to 32 years in prison. "You are no good. Do you understand me?" the guard Louis Pepe yelled at Mamdou Mahmoud Salim. The defendant, "Why don't you kill me? I am dead." The judge, Deborah Batts of Federal District Court, ejected Mr. Pepe after he had been warned several times about outbursts that occurred outside the formal time allotted for his comments. As United States Marshals escorted him out of the courtroom in his own country, Mr. Pepe's voice, I'll put that in there, Mr. Pepe's voice echoed in the marble hall of the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. At the time of the attack at the correctional center in Lower Manhattan, Salim was awaiting charges of participating in a terrorism conspiracy. He's a founding member of Al-Qaeda, and he pleaded guilty to sharpening a comb and stabbing it into Pepe's eye. The stabbing was part of what prosecutors said was a larger plot to brutalize even more people, including Mr. Salim's lawyer, whom he wanted replaced with new counselors. Mr. Salim sharpened a comb using the underside of his concrete desk in his cell at the correctional center. He used the comb to attack Mr. Pepe in order to seize the keys to 10 South, the wing of the correctional center. Prosecutors have said he intended to free his co-defendants and take hostages. There was nobody watching out for Pepe. There wasn't nobody bird-dogging Pepe. He's cunning, he's devious, he's brutal, a prosecutor, Robert Bueller, told Judge Batts in seeking a life sentence. Officer Pepe was truly a nice man and a good person, and Salim picked him for that very reason. He lost his left eye because of the stabbing and some of the sight in his right eye. He bears a scar across the left side of his head above his ear. He has lost much of his movement in his right arm and leg, and 70% of his ability to speak. That could be your son that you got to take care of once this once these nuts turn all of the terrorists loose. And they're going to turn them loose. He was in court yesterday in a wheelchair to give what is referred to by the court system as a victim's impact statement. At times rambling and incomprehensible during the statement, Mr. Pepe raised his voice and banged his palm on the table from which he spoke. He repeatedly pointed to Mr. Salem, who held his head low. "Have you really ever looked?" he said, pointing to his left eye socket. "There's nothing in there." Mr. Pepe cannot read anymore, his sister Eileen Trotter said in a written statement. She gave to the court and the news media that she used the bright red images drawn on yellow paper to help Mr. Pepe remember what he wanted to say yesterday. Mr. Pepe described the torturous beating with punches and kicks after he had fallen to the ground, blinded by hot sauce. Mr. Salomon and his cellmate, Khalfan Khamis Mohammed, his co-defendant in the embassy bombings, squirted into his face. At one point, he said he thought, "Oh God, please kill me. What did I do?" Mr. Pepe asked Judge Batts, "If you can, make it never, never, never," a reference, it seemed, to when Mr. Salem should be released from prison. And then later, Mr. Salem Richard B. Lynn enraged Mr. Pepe when he suggested that there was no prolonged torture on the day of the stabbing. Mr. Lynn also argued against a prison sentence that would exceed the federal guidelines, adding that Mr. Salem, who pleaded guilty to conspiracy and attempted murder, could have killed Mr. Pepe but did not. What, are you kidding me? At this point, Mr. Pepe shouted no from the audience. The judge asked for silence, and someone in the courtroom gallery protested, "Let him speak." As Pepe began to speak, Judge Batts asked the Marshals Service to step in and remove Mr. Pepe from the courtroom. Now, this is the guy who should be governor of the state of New York. So, you know what? He's out on disability. He was making $47,000 a year, and he took care of his aging parents. How's that? And now he's on two-thirds of $47,000. He sits blind in a room. And here's an article from CNN. Prosecutors don't have video of jail stabbing. When Federal Corrections Officer Louis Pepe was stabbed in the eye inside the maximum security wing, of Manhattan's federal jail last November, the video cameras were on, as they are 24 hours a day, the monitor screens working. But when FBI agents investigated the attack, which allegedly came at the hands of terrorist conspirators, what could have been powerful evidence did not exist. There was no videotape showing the hallways and cells at the time of the attack. A federal jury heard on Thursday as the Pepe stabbing was recounted for the second day. Government prosecutors are offering the incident as proof of the future probable danger from Khalfan Khamis Mohammed, the convicted Tanzania embassy bomber who faces the death penalty. And Mohammed shared a jail cell at the time with his inmate. So the two guys were in the same cell. Boy, that really makes sense. How's that for security? I bet you Justin Volpe doesn't get to share a cell with anybody. How sad. Absolutely sad. The comb-turned weapon was purchased at the jail commissary. According to prosecution evidence, FBI Joel Felsch told the jury that agents found commissary receipts inside the inmate cell indicating that Salem had purchased two combs and a brush. and that Mohammed had purchased two brushes since the beginning of their incarceration, or they must do a lot of hairdos. The government alleges Asylum also stabbed one of the officers responding to the Pepe attack with a brush sharpened into a shank. Agents found six handwritten scraps of paper inside the Mohammed Salim cell, but no agents could recall the note's exact locations. For example, under which bed were they found, and the only fingerprints and palm prints detected on the notes belonged to Salim and FBI fingerprint analyst Charles Akubalis. And they went into their own routine, we're Muslims and we're being discriminated against. Yeah. Okay, so that's it. So you met Louis Pepe. How do you feel about him? Would you like to go visit him? Where is he today? Is he happier or sadder? How do you think he felt on 9-1-1? Do you think he tore his heart out on 9-1-1? Listening to those people screaming, whose screams were silenced in a minute and a half, and we got a president that just has decided he's going to turn them all loose. He's going to give them back to other countries. Who's he going to give them to? Yemen? They go home for lunch in Yemen. How can he give them to a country that tortures worse than we do? How can he do a Pontius Pilate? The man is a fool. He's a dupe. And he's done bad news today. And many a black soldier will die because of it. Along with their white brothers.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He has loosed his fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Of 100 circling camps, they have built for him an altar in the evening dews and depths. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamps. His face is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
While God is marching on.
So the big news today is that Pat Tillman was shot by his own friendly fire. And now the left wants it declared a homicide. But 911 was just a coincidence. 911 was just a fender bender. But when a GI gets killed by friendly fire, the Communist Party of North America wants it to be called a homicide. Well, here's my reply to the homicide charges. Soon we will all be Tillmans, not to worry. Everybody is going to get a chance to take a bullet for their country. The Arab world is small change. Wait till you see who arrays against us. Those who pretend to be divided will unite for the kill. Then we will have to defend your country or die. Never can happen has already happened, and war rooms over all the world are planning to destroy the American weakling. And that's how they see us, thanks to slime balls like you. I hope the Iranian student who ran over the 9 draft dodges gets transferred to Yale with a bigger truck. A country who betrays the military will have no military. Let's see you negotiate peace at the cockpit door on your knees with 2 minutes to go with a guy who says, shh, shh, it's okay. You better strike back for your country and you better support your country or you're not going to have a country. And who's going to take you in, loser? Hi, you boys and girls. It's Captain Boycott. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party Book.com. And I just wanted to share this little poem with you. My brother sent it to me. He took it off a wall in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And it's a poem about World War One, and it's written by a Canadian officer and doctor. And who had just watched a young man die, and as he officiated at the burial ceremony, which took place almost at the battlefield, he jotted down this poem, and a mailman had come by, a fellow trooper had come by who was delivering the mail. And he read it to him, and they both felt it was a pretty decent poem. And what happened was he didn't think so he crumpled it up and he threw it in a ditch. And somebody picked it up and they sent it to the London Times, who rejected it. But another newspaper picked it up and printed it. And today, it's well known throughout the world, and the poem is called In Flanders Fields, and it's a good reminder, as George Patton says, that the war has been going on since the beginning of time, and war will continue to go on until the end of time. In Flanders Fields, in Flanders Fields the poppies blow. And if you ever seen these little poppies, sometimes outside of churches, veterans sell them to remind you of the losses that we incurred in World War One, along with the Canadians and the British and the Germans and the French. And that was supposed to be the war to end all wars. In Flanders Fields the poppies blow, between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly. Scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead short days ago. We lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow. Loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from falling hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If you break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. So that's from one warrior to another, and you can pass that on through the Spirit of America. We take you now to the headquarters of the Democrat Socialist Party. The American flag burning ceremony has just finished, and they're now saying they're taking the Pledge of Non-Allegiance. The Che Guevara Children's Choir has just finished doing the Christian creche dance, and they're picking up the pieces of the broken creches and burning them along with the Bible. Here come the 48 senators who voted to burn the flag 40 days before 9/11, and they will please rise for the Democrat National Anthem. Come the 48 senators who voted to burn the flag as they pass in review under the new American symbol, the O over the highway. Red and white highway comes. Daniel Akaka from Hawaii. Evan Bai from India. Robert Bennett from Utah. Here comes the Joseph Biden. Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico, who wants to destroy the United States military for the good of the country. Barbara Boxer from California. Robert Byrd, flag burner and barn burner. Maria Cantwell from the communist state of Washington. Gene Carnahan from Missouri. Thomas Carper from Delaware. Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island. Hillary Clinton from the doormat state of New York. Ted Cochran from Mississippi. Kent Conrad from North Dakota. John Corzine, now the Commissar of New Jersey. Thomas Daschle from South Dakota, who will soon reappear as Tsarina. Thomas Christopher Dudd from Connecticut, who gets low mortgages for himself but nobody else. Byron Dorgan from North Dakota. Richard Durbin, who has killed more Americans than Al Qaeda. As a matter of fact, he's up in Mosul for the Zarqawi Award. And hang in there, and we'll give you more of this list of communist celebrities, those who can hurt America more than you can dream. The procession continues of the flag burners of record, and here comes John Edwards, a Democrat from North Carolina, a Russell Feingold from Wisconsin, Bob Graham from Florida, Comrade Tom Harkin from Iowa, Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, James Jeffords from Vermont, Edward Kennedy from Massachusetts, John Kerry from Davos, Switzerland, Herb Cole, the No Cheesehead, Say No to Cheese, Wisconsin, Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, Patrick Leahy, Troop Movement Leaker, and Heavy Drinker, and Flag Burner Extraordinaire, Carlos the Jekyll Levin from the Islamic State of Michigan, Joe Liverwurster from Connecticut, Match McConnell from Kentucky, Barbara Mikulski from Maryland, Patty Murray from the Soviet state of Washington, Bill Nelson, the astronaut, the baby bayonetta and flag burner of record, Rick Nichols from Oklahoma, Jack Reed from the pyromaniac state of Rhode Island, John Rockefeller from the slave state of West Virginia, Paul Sarbanes from Maryland, Chucky Schumer, the bowshot admiral from New York, Gordon Smith, who can be counted on to betray his country at a moment's notice, Arlen Specter, who gets phone calls at 3 a.m. from the Queen of Demons, Debbie Stabenow, whose theme is Stab 'em Now, Stab 'em Then, Stab 'em Any Way You Can, Fred Thompson, the conservative, Robert Torricelli, who got a Chinese bribe payer 5 years in jail and did no timeshare, John Warner, who married Cleopatra, Paul Not-So-Wellstone, and Ron Wyden from the Al-Qaeda Training Center of Oregon. And those are all the people who voted to burn the flag 40 days before 9/11. And after the two towers came down, they wanted to know what Bush knew and when did he know it. For sure they knew nothing. And today they're betraying us big time.
From out of the east to New York City, the wind carries the cry of the Razuli. Oh, my beloved, rise up. Touch the eyes, touch the ears, touch the forehead. Put your head to the ground. Fart high. Oh, my beloveds, the news today is very good. And Dick Turbin, the American senator, has joined Al-Qaeda. I have a picture of Dick. He is on our website. He says, I will not run, nor will I accept the nomination of the Democrat Party for the 2008 elections. But I would like to give a shout-out to Marine killer Kevin Seitz, who is now in Iran on an Irish visa. Kevin is the MSNBC backshooter who tried to have a young Marine executed in the communist media for shooting an Al-Qaeda who was still moving. Now Kevin is in Iran licking Ahmadinejad's boots for ratings. Here is the scoop, Kevin, for you. Stay there until the American bombers come. Be sure to laser paint your cornrows. Too bad you did not go on an Israeli passport. Then you would get to eat the barbed wire for brunch. I also have a picture of my website on the last sighting of Osama bin Laden, and he is with the Zawahiri. Zawahiri and bin Laden are in a barbershop, and bin Laden is getting up to have his hair cut. And who's the barber? It's American barber. I'm next. I don't like the way you said that. They bump on Zawahiri's head. That's Zawahiri. Because Zawahiri in Arabic means one who smells like fish. The bump on Zawahiri's forehead is a GPS chip. And today's special is close shaves. My fellow Democrats, we are going to return to power in 2006, bin Laden is saying. I endorse you. 15 flag-burning senators are up for reinfection. My beloveds, send them packing and restore the full faith and credit of the American people. No more terms for termites. Throw out the leftovers. 40 days before 9/11, 48 senators voted to burn the flag. SJR 7. It is a matter of public record and can be found on www.captainsblog.us and www.spiritofamericaparty.com. And we also broadcast on the Pirate Radio, www.pirateradio.com. So, my beloveds, until we meet again, when the stick in the sand is equal to its shadow, that's 3 p.m. for you Bedouins. May God see you safely home. And New York super duper Wakba.
Hi, you boys and girls. It's Captain Boycott. Today is November the 1st. That's All Saints Day. It's a holy day of obligation. If you didn't go to church, you're going to go to hell. Unless you send me $500. And that's what I call absolute absolution. But the big news today, speaking of hell, is that John Kerry, Jumbo Jetmouth, has unleashed the hounds of hell with a Grey Poupon communist statement. And the Democrats are now in the outhouse without Keith Doberman's toilet paper. And you got to see MSNBC. They're scrambling like crazy. They got Mirtha on right now, blessing the flock. The only thing that's missing is the exorcist on MSNBC. They've had every communist pinko wacko on there. You would think they were on the Titanic, and there's one compartment left. But here's what happened. The rat is out of the bag. The Democrats allowed Kerry to speak, and now they've told him he must not divulge the contract on America. And that's what the Democrats have. The Republicans had a contract with America, and the Democrats have a contract on America. And if you think there's one Democrat out there that cares about one GI, then what you need to do is clean your service revolver and look right straight into the barrel. A slip of the tongue today gave Americans an early warning as what to expect if the Democrats win reinfection. The party of death to America was on all their shill stations last night and this morning, patching the quilt of darkness. Apparently, John Lucky Pierre Kerry let the rat out of the bag when he announced the real intentions of his party. He gave America a preview of coming communist attractions in their contract on America. Now we learn that Ted Comrade Kennedy made a deal with the Russians to undermine President Reagan when he was sitting as President of the United States. This party is trying to clone a country. I wouldn't be surprised if Jimmy Carter asked to be buried in the Kremlin next to Danny Glover. This morning I shopped at the anti-American networks, you know, the usual suspects, the alphabet letters, ABC, always bashing Catholics, CBS, the Catholic bashing system. God help us, man. The Trotskyites have taken over. The only thing that's missing is Stalin. That's why I go over to my little chapel and I light a candle to St. Joseph McCarthy, that he comes back from heaven, comes down from heaven and gives us a new list. But anyway, this morning I shopped the anti-American networks and they're all in bailout mode. Kerry has been silenced by the dilatation and curatage party and warned he must not reveal any more plans until after the DNC wins reinfection. Then and only then will they execute Plan B in the contract on America. CNN has a big American flag and picture of the White House as a backdrop for the first time in 8 years. And that's only because Lynn Cheney fragged them. The first time in 8 years an American flag has been shown on the Communist News Network and Sniper Team. And over at Marine Killing MSNBC, Anus and Dave Gregory were practicing Massachusetts haughtiness. Poison Ivy League universities and communist state universities are now giving degrees in arrogance and a master's in betrayal of your dwelling land. If you don't stop these anti-Americans now, you will be running over the bridge again, being chased by another DNA dust cloud. The Democrats want to bring the troops home. The only problem is they're not our troops. Say hello to Khalid the Virgin Counter. That's the KKK for you, Kerry, Kennedy, and Khalid. Thank you, Killer John, for giving us a heads up and forecasting what we can expect from the party of death. You should get thee to a nunnery or an airport and rent your big mouth out as a jumbo jet hangar. Now you can join the Islamo-Feingolds and become trappers. And rule number one for trappers is to keep your big trap shut. God bless the troops in the field. Your only friend left in America, Captain Boycott, and a Boy Scout. Straight Boy Scout, too. Happy high school diploma and more smarts than you. www.aspiritofamericapartybook.com, www.apirateradio.com. Get the book. You still got a few days left to save yourself. Otherwise, you're going to be in a camp one day looking through the barbed wire at the Khalid at the Virgin Counter. And sidebar to Savage, welcome home. We missed you. Everything you said was true last night. And Mark Levin, fight on, but baby, fight on. I'll talk to you.
That's our show, folks. I'm going to close with a tribute to women. It's a nice tone.
Face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She may be the song the summer sings, maybe the chill the autumn brings, maybe 100 different things within the measure of a day. Maybe the beauty or the beast, maybe the famine or the feast, may turn each day into a heaven or a hell. She may be the mirror of my dreams, a smile reflected in the stream. She may not be what she may see inside her shell. Private and so proud, no one's allowed to see them when they cry. She may be the love that cannot hope to last, that comes to me from shadows of the past, and I remember till the day I die. She may be the reason I survive. Take her laughter and her tears and make them all my souvenirs. For where she goes, I've got to be. The meaning of my life is she.
Hi, you boys and girls. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book.com.